Okay, there we go. So, we are on question 21 of the midterm. So, if we assume that form example is not defined on line 1, then what is the value of form example on line 3? So, a lot of you went like, what? There's nothing on line 1. No, that was on purpose. It's saying before you start the function, let me make this a little... Before you start the function, and after the start the function. So, why did I put that in there about line 1?
Before any of this starts.
Before any of this code is run. That's what I'm really wondering about. But the key thing for understanding this is understanding this line. That was the key to this question, was understanding the last line of this function. What is this doing? See, we're defining an anonymous function here, but we're not, this form example is not equal to the function that we're defining here. It's equal to the return value of that function, which is explicitly being called right here. So we define, so the function's being defined here, and that closed paren, and this open paren means we're calling that function with these arguments. So this means that form example here is bound to the value of this. So it is either form example or the empty object. Form example, if this is the first time this code is run, form example is an undefined symbol. If it's undefined symbol, it evaluates to false. And so the or fails, and so you get the empty object. And that then gets passed in here. And so that means if form example is not defined beforehand, then here, form example inside the function is bound to the empty object. So the trick there was testing this to see, did you know what the heck that was doing? Okay, if you don't know, if that explanation did not help, then you should ask, because this is important.
So, you're on line 2, you bar, for example, form example. And so it's created and it's undefined, and then it is equal to an anonymous function.
No. No, it's not.
Well, sorry, it's equal to the output of
an anonymous function.
So
the anonymous function takes two arguments plus
right.
This undefined.
And if you fast forward to the bottom where you're actually calling it.
Yes. You're calling it with form example or empty object and dollar.
Why isn't there like a dot or something? Or how does that
a dot for what? The idea here is, so what happens if this is run more than once, if you loaded this object more than once. So let's say you do this first time, this will go through as empty object. The next time through, form example will be true. So that means the old form example will be given as an input here. And so that way you'll just be rebinding the variables, updating them.
But from a purely syntactic...
Yes, the syntax is what really matters here.
Var symbol equals
an expression.
So bracketed and then bracketed.
Is calling an... When you have bracket,
yeah.
That means that...
Like a lambda thing?
So what it is, the first bracket is you're evaluating the contents of it.
Right.
And the idea is... Exactly, and that function is then being called. But the parentheses means call whatever the function is that this inner expression returns. And then, so now, if, yes?
Why don't you have to pass an undefined?
Why don't you have to pass an undefined?
Yeah.
Well, the point of the undefined is to be undefined. The whole point of this is that you, when you call this and you do this, now, honestly, as a defensive programming technique, I think this is a little weak because if I think of it from a security standpoint, I can think of ways to make undefined still mess with you.
Not inside that scope.
Yeah. What if I just pass something right here?
Well, then you're modifying my code. This is assuming this is my code.
Right, yeah.
This is for other files are messing with me.
Yeah. So again, it all depends on your threat model. But again, if it's all my code...
If someone's modifying my code, all bets are off.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So if someone's modifying your code, all bets are off. So here you want to make sure you get undefined. So, okay, so you run time, then you're getting an undefined. So what this is just a game. So the fact is, when you have no...
It's weak. I'll concede it's weak, but it does what it's supposed to.
Fair enough. So you're calling a function here. You're giving it two arguments. What if the function you're calling expects more than that two arguments, all the rest of the arguments are going to be bound to undefined. So what we're doing now is we're making the symbol undefined refer to the value undefined. Because this is a symbol, just like any other, you could have made it 5. Or hello.
Oh, so it just...
Otherwise, undefined in this context is a global reference. By putting it here, it's a local reference. And the value of it is now the undefined thing, just by construction. So to understand this, you have to realize that in JavaScript, it's very consistent. Symbols can be arbitrarily redefined. So any symbol you access that you did not explicitly create the binding for, and it's not a reserved term, someone else could have set it in the global object and changed its value. And if you do this to something like undefined, it's going to cause chaos. So this is a bit of defensive programming saying someone might have messed up undefined. So here I will make sure I have a local version of undefined, the symbol, which is truly bound to the undefined value. So the symbol is local because it's part of the parameters. The value of it being the undefined value in JavaScript is gotten because we're calling the function without anything as that third parameter. Yes?
Never actually use that inside that
function,
the value
undefined.
No.
Because one day we might.
Because one day we might. So this is an idiom. It's an idiom. It's not. It doesn't really hurt you. It might save your butt sometimes. JavaScript is full of these kind of idioms because JavaScript is so flexible. Yes, and then here.
How does method overloading work with that?
Method overloading?
Or just like function overloading?
There is no operator overloading. There is.
Once you have a function with the same.
So basically, you're worrying about inheritance.
No, I think he's talking about two functions with the same name but different number of arguments.
Oh.
Yeah, it's not a thing in JavaScript.
That's not a thing in JavaScript.
Well,
yeah.
Everyone is, because you can just pass less.
But there's not like, because in other languages, you have the same name, function foo with two arguments and function foo with three arguments, and they can have completely separate code.
You can even have.
Yes, that's not a thing in JavaScript. And frankly, honestly, doing that sort of thing, I think, is insane.
Yes.
What?
Well, I mean,
No. That's I'm saying is at, because that's one definition of the function.
Yeah.
So.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So to keep you symbols at any point in a JavaScript program, a symbol has one value. What value that symbol has, what it resolves to, depends upon context, depends upon the scope in which you're doing it. But a symbol always has one value. This is different from other languages. Like you go to Perl, one symbol can have like 5 different values depending on what operator you put in front of it. Whether you put dollar or @ or something. And in languages which allow for different number of arguments, they'll have different values. JavaScript, one value.
So,
including functions.
In JavaScript, any number of parameters to a function.
Right.
So, and it has the arguments array thingy that
if you want to get all the extra ones.
Has everything, but you formally bind only the ones that you
name.
So what happens if the synonymous function were to have more stuff passed to it? Like undefined would get defined to the third formal parameter, and then the rest of it would just sort of hang.
You would have no name for them, but you could see them in the argument.
Right. So the only reason this works is because you've written this code.
It's because you're calling it.
You're the only person calling it, and you're just, this is a safety check because
this sort of pattern is also useful for connections.
Go ahead, yeah.
X or Y are undefined, give them these values.
That's like the C equivalent would be actually giving the values in the declaration.
Yeah.
And that's how you would. Okay. Huh, cool.
So,
that's basically what's happening with that one.
Yeah. Okay, real quick, yes, go.
So I think I have kind of a new.
That's fine. Listen,
I want to get back to the original question you're asking.
Yes.
We're running, everything's happening, great for us. Line one happens. You're asking about what is the form example at line three. So var has been called, form example has been called, this anonymous function has now been called, and it knows to go to line 21, and that's the information that gets passed to the anonymous function.
So you can't think of this as executing as line by line by line. I was asking what the value is in that context. And the fact is, at line 3, we are now in the lexical scope of this anonymous function.
Okay.
In the lexical scope of this anonymous function, these symbols are bound as parameters to, as parameters to the function. The question, so whatever value they're going to have is depends on how the function is called. The only time this function is called is right here. And and it's called, and these are the two arguments that are passed in. And so, and I had to say what the I had to say that form example had no value beforehand, because otherwise this OR value would default to it. If it was anything except for the empty object or undefined or something. So that's why we got back. I could say it's going to be that. Yes? At line 3, it hasn't been called?
Yeah, it's still going.
So don't confuse, this is what I was saying, don't confuse parsing with scoping. This is why I explicitly said that, if we assume that it's not defined on line, what is a value, for example, on line 3? I'm saying at line 3, what is the scope that we're talking about on line 3? At any line in a program, a certain scope is active, which means there is a certain context for all symbols to be referenced. If you're thinking of a really primitive language, there is one global scope. And the value of any symbol is the same always. Normally, if you're thinking of that sort of thing, it's a dynamic scope, which means you have to care about where in the execution of the program you are. And that will determine what symbols are defined and what aren't defined. But what we are talking here in a language like JavaScript is lexical scoping. So we have nested scopes that are defined by functions. So the symbols that are valid inside of this function are the ones defined inside of this function. And any things that are not defined, JavaScript says, well, we'll go to the outer context. We'll go up this chain, which would be going now from here. There's no surrounding function here, so we're going to the global context. So when you look at any symbol in here, you're like, what does a symbol mean? So we're talking here. Now, if you have a dot, that means you treat the symbol as a reference to an object, and you're looking at the properties of the object. So it all depends on what object you're referring to there. But so that's inevitably somewhat dynamic in terms of it's what the state of the object is at this time. But here, what is the value of country? Before here, what's the value of countries? Before we run this bar, maybe there was a countries defined beforehand in the global scope. But at this line now, we're defining countries in the scope, in the inner scope of this function. That means from here, from this line on to the end of this function, countries is bound to this value. Any reference to it will be referring to this array. Now, we aren't defining any more other symbols here except, well, see here, var, we're defining another local symbol, and we're using it. Now here, I'm saying that if we don't have a reference to form example inside of this except for right here. So really when I'm asking about line 3, I'm really wondering, what am I returning? A form example.
Yeah, but see, like I know what you're saying. Like, the problem having a problem with this is that we are at line 3. We haven't reached that.
You're at line, in order to execute line, so here there's two passes you always have to think about. What's going to first happen when you're parsing this is the parser is going to come along and say, oh, I've got a var keyword. Okay. Okay, oh, there's a symbol. Okay, now I've got something, some sort of expression. Then it's going to read until the end of this parentheses, define this function. And once that function is defined, then say, okay, now I have a function. Oh, now I'm supposed to call it.
Now
then it calls it. So it's going to first define the function. So this actually gets into a question on the next page, which drove me nuts. So we will talk about that in a second here. So this is so under what conditions is the anonymous function defined on line 12 called? So this is the function right here. When is that function called? Yeah. What say with the tick box? Yes, it's when this tick box changes. When the checkbox changes, then it tries to either make the email address, you know, an entry field visible or not. You should be able to tell that because, yeah, what it is really, it's on the change event. And the change event for, you know, the send email checkbox. If you had something about the send email, you know, you didn't know this was a checkbox, but you see this thing, send email is checked. Well, if it's checked, it might be a checkbox. You've also seen this code.
Yes.
But I'm saying some people hadn't seen this code. Why? You could ask. But so I'm saying you could have been able to figure it out on from the code itself if you looked. So that's what I say. Now then this one here. What change would omitting the var keyword in line 4 cause? Would this change affect correctness of this function? So var keyword on line 4, right here, saying delete this var. What happens?
It becomes global.
That's it. A number of you said that it makes it undefined, and so the autocomplete won't work. I just wanted to tear my hair out. It's like, this is JavaScript, not Java. You refer to a symbol. You can refer to any symbol. You can assign it. It's valid. It works. It just becomes a global symbol. That's what's annoying about JavaScript. But that's the way JavaScript works. So it'll work fine. It just becomes global. I was happier if you said it should work fine unless something outside this function messes with the global, you know, with the value of countries, which they could. Yes?
So the var keyword would just tie that symbol to this, the immediate scope.
Exactly. When you say var, it's saying, I want you to define this symbol in the innermost function scope.
And essentially that scope that
just... It's just going to go away. Exactly. That's the purpose of var. And if you don't, it's just going to... It will assign it to something, and the context it'll do is whatever the enclosing one, which is generally the global one. So, there was... Yes?
Wait, so if you don't have the var, it won't go through the higher levels of scope until it gets to global? It just goes straight there? Or
it just... It uses whatever... if you don't say var,
yeah,
it's not going to try to create a binding. It's going to try to use a binding. So it starts searching for a binding. And when it starts searching, it'll search. And if it doesn't find an existing one, it'll bottom out at the global context. And so they'll say, oh, I didn't find it. This is JavaScript. Should I generate an error? No, I'll just define it. Yes?
So then if I'm defining a function inside of a function as before,
mm-hmm,
and in the innermost scope, I just say... whatever variable is whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You say it searches for scope, so will it be in the scope above my current scope, or will it...
The nesting of... So when you do var, it's... So when I'm talking about it being undefined, it's unbound, it says... You have a function that encloses another function.
Yes.
The inner function can see all the symbols defined in the outer context, but it can't create anything in that context. It just exactly because all it's a thing. It's a very simple kind of thing. It's just it looks in the current scope. Is the symbol defined? No. Look at the next enclosing scope. Is the symbol defined? No. Keep doing this recursively until you run out of scopes. And when you run out of scopes, it says, "Crap, I now need to define this." So it defines it in the last scope it used to look, which is a global scope. Whenever it's not bound.
So if you had, or say you just...
Or explicitly set to undefined, yes.
Right. So if you're not assigning, and you say like source in the autocomplete is...
If I delete...
Continents or
something. So if I delete this line,
yeah,
source, countries is going to be the value of undefined.
Okay. It's not like an empty object or anything.
It's undefined.
Okay.
That's what it specifically means. It's saying that this symbol... is undefined.
However,
you never gave a definition of it. See, really, when you think about a language like JavaScript, this is its functional quality, and it's really a mathematical... Sorry, go ahead and ask your question. Sorry, you know.
You know how you said it would affect it if it was global, or countries outside of the function or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that not true? It's an anonymous
function. No. If I drop this var... then countries is going to be bound to the global context.
Yeah.
And so if somewhere else in your code you mess with the global context with a symbol called countries, like one time through this function, this could work. And the next time you call it, you change countries to something else, and it won't work.
Again, it's an anonymous function, right?
No. If long as you have the var, then countries is bound inside of the anonymous function, and you're safe. You're right, nothing can touch it. I delete the var, it now is a global symbol. Any part of the program can change the value of countries.
But how would you call the function again?
Oh, how would I call this function again?
This one.
No, I wouldn't call this function again, but notice countries is used here for the autocomplete.
It's not clear if changing countries retroactively would change it.
That's true. That would depend upon how autocomplete works. In principle, the autocomplete could take this value and keep it, or it could make a copy of it and use it. If it didn't, then you could then probably potentially through it wouldn't, it would be fine. Depends on the implementation of that. But you're now depending upon implementation details, and that's a bad idea.
Or if this code is being run multi-threaded.
JavaScript is single-threaded.
Oh.
Huh? So JavaScript's single-threaded for many good reasons. These kind of functional languages. So back to what I was saying is, when you think of a functional language, think math. When you do an assignment here, this is a definition in a very mathematical sense. You're defining this to be this. And so when you say something is undefined, it's saying, you didn't define this. I have no definition in a mathematical sense. So give me a definition and I'll do something with it. And then what is the purpose of the call to change on line 18? A lot of you told me that this function, this change, calls this anonymous function right here from 12 to 17. Okay, fine. Yes, it is calling that function, which updates the state of the of the email input box based on the value of the checkbox. That is its purpose. But I gave you one point for that.
Okay. I said that, I get that.
Okay, I'll have to look at it. I listen, grading errors happen, and I'm happy to look at anything. Please come to my office hours if you can, or email me and take a photo of your midterm, and I can look at it. But just real quick here. So I tried to give you like one point if you just told me what this function did. But the point of this line is to synchronize the value of the checkbox with whether the email input is hidden or not. And the fact is that when we define the form, it should be hidden because the checkbox is normally unchecked. And so it should start off hidden, but if you just read the HTML, you'll have the input box. You'll have the state where you have the unchecked, and you'd see the input box. We did this in class. But what I was trying to say is that this, when you call a function that's for events, and then you have an explicit call to it, you're trying to synchronize the state of them first, so that now they'll always be
explicitly change is calling the change event.
Yes. Right? Explicitly change is calling the change event. But all I was really looking for is to make sure the email address input starts off hidden. Which you could have reasoned through is like, what's going to be the state? If you reason through like what's the state of the checkbox or not, this is going to be called when the page is basically loaded. Why do you want to call it once? You want to make sure whether the field is hidden or not, depending upon whatever the default value was of the checkbox. So either you had to reason through it or you had to remember it. One of the two. So now, moving on to the next bit of code. So the first question was a bit of a trick. Not that much of a trick, but a bit of a trick. So the only hpget command allowed by this application is for slash. True or false? False. Why? Now the only route that's defined, the only get route is defined, which is right here, is for slash. Public. Exactly. That was the reason why the answer is false is because of this line. Where's the public? Yes. Views. Yeah, sorry, not views. Sorry. No. Where's the public? Yeah, right here. Use require stylus middleware during public. Which is basically saying that there is a static HTML, a static web server built into the Express application. So anything in that public directory, it will respect a GET request for. So this was a little bit of a harder question. I will admit that. But that required you to see that the GET requests are not just those for defined routes, but also for the other stuff. And that's the thing about using these frameworks, is they provide you lots of functionality. So really, this was just kind of saying, do you realize how much functionality you're getting? Which is a lot.
Isn't that actually the last line?
Huh?
It's the last line, right?
It's the next line.
Yeah, 20.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is requiring express static. That's the actual web thing. Well, the reason why this is true is because this stylus is just for style sheets, for dynamically generate style sheets, CSS, with using stylus. Yeah, which you can put them in public, and then they'll be parsed. So, and notice the ordering. First it says, do the stylus things, and if it's not stylus, then just serve it up as it is. The order of these here matter. Because, you know, basically it's checking, can I do this with the input? No. Can I do this with the input? It's looking through, when you get a request, it's trying to see which method to use on it. Then in the HTTP mode, the create server should originally be assigned to as a method of what object? Exports. So this I was explicitly asking if, it didn't actually matter the HTTP module. The fact is, it was a module. You're defining a public method of a module. It's saying that when you wanted to do this HTTP create server, where is that symbol coming from? If you look in the HTTP module, you'll see this is assigned to the exports. Now, how could you know that? It's because we talked about this in Express, if you look in the routes, the routes are modules, and everything's assigned to exports. So these are the questions I was asked. Like, the first page was, come on, here are some points. Second page was, okay, if you're paying attention here. This page is, okay, do you understand what's going on? If you didn't understand it before this midterm, okay, I'm hoping you learn it now. Certainly, you should figure this out by the final. But honestly, if you're building an application in Express, which you have to do for your project, you should understand these things.
Is Express actually required?
No, it's not. But you could do it other ways, but frankly, it's, I think, the easiest thing I've given you. If you want to learn some other frameworks, some other things, go ahead. If it's in Node, that's one thing. Some people have come to me and say, can I do this in PHP, please? And I said, no.
Is there a PHP interpreter for Node? Oh, God.
Why? What if you write a PHP interpreter?
The level of offense I would take at that, it's just like... Oh.
Also, again, we're only grading your JavaScript code.
Yeah, right. So now, like, for example, starting on Thursday, what I wanted to start doing is talking about databases, and what I'm going to talk about is Mongo. And you know what the code is embedded in Mongo?
JavaScript.
JavaScript everywhere. So.
You could write a PHP interpreter in Node.
Yes, you could. Oh, it's even better than that. Actually, I'm going to show you something right now as a little break before we continue with this.
As a string defined in your Java.
What? How is this
a specifying type ASM.js, a strict subset of JavaScript that can be used as a low-level efficient target language for compilers. This sub-language effectively describes a safe virtual machine for memory-unsafe languages like C and C++. A combination of static and dynamic validation allows static JavaScript engine to employ ahead of time optimization compilation strategy for valid ASM.js code. So in other words, you can take your C code, compile it to JavaScript, and run it in your browser. So you could take a PHP interpreter, compile the C, and run it. And the crazy thing about ASM.js is it's fast. It's like within a factor of two of like. Okay, I was looking. So
there's browser Python as well.
Browser Python, oh, so which is compiled. No, so the idea of ASM.js is it's enabling things like Python and other things to be run, basically anything. Like your game engine, you can see right there. So, what's fun is like, why don't you specify a bytecode syntax instead of a strange JavaScript idiom? Because, for compilers like Emacs Script and Mandrill, of course, some people think we can turn this into standard assembly, but the fact is that JavaScript is everywhere already. You now can run your code on any web browser because it's just JavaScript. It's a JavaScript subset.
But how is it as fast?
Well, it turns out that the subset it defines is really, really optimizable. So if it's just sort of a plain Jane JavaScript interpreter that hasn't really even done this, it'll run it. It just won't necessarily run it that fast. But if it's been optimized for it, it'll run it really fast. There's a reason why I picked JavaScript for this class. You're going to be dealing with JavaScript for a long time. Some people are saying it's the assembly of the future. Yeah, it's kind of that. Now, I just want to see, where is the... Okay. Okay. Yeah, micro benchmarks. So here, this is. So native is this little orange, which is here. This is what we're talking about here. Well, notice Chrome sucks. That's Chrome. The red bars.
Yeah, I don't know what those are, but these are some micro benchmarks.
So these are small things. These are small. Basically, it's just, so this is testing the speed of the raw code, as opposed to I/O. If you include I/O, it will do better, because that's calling other things. So this is the worst case performance. And you notice that Chrome hasn't been optimized for ASM.js, but just standard Firefox is pretty good at this. You might guess who developed ASM.js subset. So it's the blue bars. The red bars are Chrome. Some of these things Chrome is pretty competitive. Other things Chrome is not at all competitive. But then the thing was specifically they've optimized it for ASM.js. So I think the versus native code. I mean, still native code is faster, but I mean we're talking a factor of two. I mean, that's not a lot of slowdown. It's twice as slow. It's like, whatever. So here's some realistic large benchmarks. So here again, Firefox now isn't so fast, but the new optimized one is.
So the bytecode is like take this raw processor.
You're assuming, see the thing is, don't assume interpretation. What modern JavaScript engines do is just-in-time compilation, which means they take the code, analyze it, turn it into machine code, and run that. And they actually do hotspot analysis, which means that the first pass of translation to machine code is quick to do, but it produces inefficient code. If you run that code a lot, it notices it, and then recompiles it and optimizes it and then runs that version. And it will cache the thing. So this is crazy. I mean, this is a whole class unto itself of how you do this well. But it's very, very fancy technology. But what are the cases? JavaScript as a base is not a crazy thing. Now, why does Chrome not care about this performance so much? Anyone know what Chrome's doing? So there's this thing called NACL, Native Client. What is it? Technical overview. So, Native Client is an open source technology for running native compiled code in the browser. with the goal of maintaining the OS portability and safety that people expect from web apps. So, so the Google people are saying, give us machine code, and we figure out this way of sandboxing it to run it safely in the browser. Mozilla is saying, screw that. That would require everyone to implement this additional code, which is almost certainly going to be buggy, and basically increase your security footprint. Just make it JavaScript. And we'll make it, and if you pick the right subset, we'll make it run fast. The neat thing about this is that the Firefox way works now. The Google way, you have to have added some technology to your browser. So.
So is that like from your server, you would serve
machine, basic standard binaries.
For any, so then your website would have to support all platforms that you want your
website. The idea is that, that's the other thing, is that what does this matter if you do native client, x86 native client, and run it on an ARM processor? Doesn't help you much. JavaScript, already done. So, anyway, a little diversion, get your brain, so let's finish going through this. So we did that one. Create server, so this, I was looking for exports. What port will the server listen on? Explain how you know. A lot of you said port 3005. And I gave you generally, and you said because it was defined on line 11, I think. Is that right? Yes, line 11. And it's just like, I gave you half marks for that. Because yes, it's probably going to be line 3005, but what does this line say?
What is actually reading it?
Huh?
That would require actually reading
it. Exactly. It says process.env.port or 3005. Which means that if process.env.port is any true value, it'll be the value of it. Otherwise, it'll be 3005. Now, if you didn't know what process.env.port was, that's fine. You could have just written it. It'll be that or 3005. But you said 3005. It's like you didn't even read the code. Yes, but that's not the value. No. What that says is it's the environment variable, the port environment variable. It's accessing the process object, the environment variables of the current process, the port environment variable. So you can set an environment variable at the command line. For those of you who know enough of the command line, you can set variables in the shell, environment variables, set the port variable to be something, and it will use it. I find this rather useful because when I'm running a Node app, oftentimes I actually have something running on port 3000 or probably things. So this way I can just set it to another one without changing the code. You don't have to edit the code every time to change the port. You just set the environment variable.
Does it use the environment variable at the time it was called, the process was initiated?
Exactly. This is that's what exactly the, when this
and
when
and
this is called yeah.
And
well, this is where it's set. Now it sets it to when the process is invoked. This environment variable cannot be changed externally after the process has been invoked. It's something inherited from its environment. So I was just looking for you to recognize there wasn't those two little vertical brackets are not just random things. It's an OR. Parse the OR. Tell me what the OR is.
I thought there's restrictions on ports, so you can only use ports above port 4000 if you're not root or something like that.
Yes,
that's
often true on Unix boxes. Yes.
Okay, but. Okay.
But that, it's above 1024, so. It's 3000. Yeah. 3005 last I checked is bigger than 1024.
I said
4000. It's 1024 is privileged ports.
Okay.
0 to 1023. But. Okay, so now, last question. The one that, and I, a lot of you got 3 out of 4 points. I could have taken off more points on this. I really wanted to, but I generally gave you 3 out of 4 if you gave the standard answer that I got, which is list all functions, including methods that are being invoked, directly called in lines 32 to 34 to explain very briefly what each does. Now, some of you actually answered, didn't actually list anything that was on 32 to 34. And some people said that things that were called, it's like the whole point is, what's being called there? Not what those are calling, what are being directly invoked. What functions are there? Give me those names. So, most of you figured that out. And you said, okay, HTTP create server is being called. Then you said listen. Now, what is listen a method of? What object?
The object that's returned by...
The object that's returned by create server, which, by convention, is the object that was called with, which is normally HTTP. This is what allows you to chain things together. It returns the object that it was called with, because it allows you to do this nice syntax. So this is HTTP create server. By convention, we know this is HTTP listen. But if you just said dot listen, I gave it to you. If you said dot create server, if you explicitly started saying it was something else or something, if you said HTTP create server listen, that is true too. So I just, but okay, so it's calling HTTP create server. That's one. That's to create the server app in your object. HTTP listen, that's to get it to be listened on a port. Now this is where things get annoying. Some of you missed that this is being called to get the property of the port value of the object. So that's a, so to get that, so that's a call. Some of you said this function was being called, this anonymous function. It is not being called. There is no call to it. It is being defined. So if a function is being defined, are the things inside of it being called? No. They will be called when it is run. So, what really bugged me was console.log was like in everyone's answer.
Damn
it. It's like...
I feel you're being a little inconsistent there, though, because before, on line 3, it's defined when you're running that run.
No, no, no. I'm saying in the lines 32 to 34...
Right, and what is the value on line 3?
No, I didn't ask that. What list all functions that are being invoked directly called in line 34? Very explain very clearly.
Line 33, console.log is being directly invoked.
So, well, yeah, because it's in that context now. So, when that actually gets run, it is.
I think we should get there.
Do I look? Let me. No, but the reason why I'm not taking that is because very explicitly I said do not include any functions that are just being defined or being called implicitly or will be called during a later function invocation. Yeah, I put this very long qualifier in there. It's like your calls that will be dialed later, very explicitly. So. Called implicitly means that by calling function A calls function B.
Yeah,
so if you call function A, function B is called.
But the app.get is being called implicitly.
Which is?
Being called
no, no, no. But the whole point is, I said don't include the implicit ones.
Okay, so you know what
that means. So is app.get... The second app.get should not be listed.
Right.
Which is why I really wanted to say... So I took off extra points when you said two invocations. Because just one... I generally gave most of you 2.5 points if you kind of were listing things, 3. But
so why app.get port only being?
It's being called here in order to get an argument for it, and then here it's going to be called when this function is called.
So that's the implicit one, and that one is explicit because you actually are.
Yes.
Calling it.
Yes. So sorry.
Just very quickly, this one. So that's literally you said some of you wrote, and I gave you one.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. It enters the anonymous function defined on lines 12 through 17 into the Evolent loop. Okay, update the state. Okay, well, what's this?
No.
I wrote that. Okay,
yeah.
I see. It enters the anonymous function.
No,
the fact is, you didn't tell me the purpose of it. I was explicitly saying, what's the purpose of this? Why is this call there? Why did I need this change thing?
So you,
because
you,
I don't need that.
What you actually wanted was...
I want to tell you how it was written. I want to know what is it for.
Because I kind of, like, assumed that that was...
I don't like that question.
So would you give one mark for if somebody said...
I said if they just told me what that... If they told me what... Like, this is for updating the email thing is present if the checkbox is checked or not.
And what was the full answer then?
If you told me it was to hide the email thing.
Oh, like literally.
That's why that line is there, is because if you don't put it there, it's going to be shown when the checkbox is unchecked.
So what I don't like about that question is...
Hold on. Okay, close the program. Get out of here. Log off. Matthew? I'm supposed to let people rifle through mine. I think I did okay.
Could you get mine?
No, I don't have it on mine.
Oh, really? Well, he said if it's not online yet, I don't think it's so.
Thank you very much.
No problem. Excuse me, I want to... The one thing that I missed was the... There's a... On the second last page, there's 22 questions that I just...
Yeah, same. That last page is...
Document, not yet. So I need to put that up, but... You should be coding right now. And
because our group is doing the document first. And
I see what you're talking about. Well, then if you're doing a design document, then...
Is there any requirements?
There are some requirements. Basically, what you want your report to be doing is telling what it does and how it does it.
So it just... is it necessary for the...
Class now?
Such as the ER... ER.